This is just a quick message to say that the following podcast contains some strong language and adult humor. But with that out of the way, let's get on with the episode.
Hello and welcome to the Talking Theatre Podcast, the podcast for you if you love all things theatre. I'm Luke.
And I'm Tom.
And each episode we get together to chat to theatre professionals, emerging theatre artists, and lovers of theatre in general.
Basically, our podcast aims to celebrate why theatre is so great with people that love theatre.
Exactly, and this week will be no different. And coming up, there'll be some of this.
I knew that I didn't want to perform, but I wanted to be involved and around artsy people.
There'll definitely be this.
And we collectively brought in like £300,000.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Funding, which was really, really cool to be a part of.
And even this.
I mean, I've always said, like, as long as it helps that one person get a job, then that's what it needs to do.
So thank you very much for tuning into this episode of the Talking Theatre Podcast. And, well, let's just get on with the show, shall we?
Hi, mate. How are things?
Hey, man. Yeah, not bad. Not bad. Just sort of cruising. Yeah. I've done lots of social events now. Things have opened up, which has been nice.
Well, that's good. And something, obviously, that has, well, opened up now is the Camden Fringe, something that we spent last week talking about. And we hope that you guys enjoyed hearing from those artists as much as we enjoyed chatting to them. And the reaction so far has been unbelievable from those episodes, and very much focused upon young and emerging artists kind of having that first or second opportunity in the arts. And I think that actually today's episode actually will also kind of hopefully be driving into that.
Yeah, no, I'm very excited for today's episode. It's a great chat with a friend of ours from uni, and just fantastic advice, great platform, and it's a slightly different angle to the creative side of theatre we haven't actually explored yet, and just sort of the administration side and the non-creative aspect, and just how much passion goes into building up theatre communities. And I'm very excited about this episode.
Absolutely.
Very happy to have done it.
Absolutely, and we hope that you obviously will enjoy this episode. So let's get into our chat with Amy Hummert. On today's episode, we are delighted to be joined by Amy Hummert. Amy graduated from Reading University with a first-class degree in BA Theatre. While at Reading, she was the assistant director of Spring Awakening and produced two shows, including an original musical at the Edinburgh Fringe in 2018. She also worked at the Apollo Victoria on the West End show Wicked as part of the Front of House team as a Christmas temp. Once graduated, she went on to work as External Relations Administrator at WAC Arts. The pandemic then hit and she began volunteering at Theatre Peckham in April 2020, where she is now Company Administrator and Company Secretary. In March 2021, she set up Opening Night Jobs, an Instagram page sharing entry-level job opportunities across the arts sector. And here to talk a little bit more about that is Amy. Hello, Amy. How are you?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Very good. So, as you probably know by now, we always start by going back to the very start, kind of that one moment on the podcast that defined your theatrical childhood or whatever. So let's jump back to that and start, as we always do, with your earliest memory of theatre is and whether you actually enjoyed it or not.
Yeah, so I was really lucky. I started dancing at like age 3, and every summer there was like a big summer's camp. And so, like, my earliest memory is doing these, like, shows over summer. I think it was, like, a week-long thing. And I was, like, in Wind in the Willows. And I was, like, the toad, I think. And so, yeah, like, we did this whole little performance. Then we got to see, like, an outdoor production of Wind in the Willows, like, during the summer thing. And I just remember it being so exciting. And then it started raining. So it all just went a bit wrong. But like that was kind of the very first like taste of theatre, I guess, that I had. And I kind of realised that I didn't really want to get off stage and I liked the attention. So I just didn't really stop after that. But yeah.
I seem to think a lot of people, when they first start theatre, it's that moment where they oh, I quite like people looking at me and laughing at what I'm doing, and that attention is quite nice. How can I do more of that? So, I mean, if you jump forward, then is there a point? Would you say that very first production you were in, or would it be something later on that may have potentially inspired it to be a career choice, or maybe choosing to do it at uni or further on? Is there a moment that you can trace it back to for that?
Well, I always knew that I didn't want to be an actress. Like, I that was something I always said. I was like, no, I'm just doing this for fun. Like, I don't want to do that long term. And so I kept going, oh, well, I'll just do it for GCSE. And then it got to A levels and I was like, oh, well, I'll just do it for AS. And then I'll drama's not serious, all that stuff. And then,
yeah,
oh, well, I don't want to carry on maths, so I definitely have to take drama again. And then yes. My mum actually turned around to me and said, oh, like, when I was trying to come up with what I wanted to do at uni, because I knew I wanted to go, but I didn't know what to study. And my mum said to me, Amy, you've worked hard for however many years, just go and do something you enjoy. So I was like, all right then. So I went to Warwick, open day actually, and I went to an English lecture because I was thinking like English and drama,
yes.
You know, it's a bit more of a sensible option.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized that I didn't understand half the things they were saying in the English lecture. It definitely was not the right path for me.
Did you do English as an A level?
Yeah, and it was my worst subject as well. So I don't know why I carry it on. Really bad idea. But then I went to like the drama thing, open day at Warwick, and like they were talking about like working in prisons, like with prisoners, and I realized that it's not just like performing, there's other aspects yes. to it. So that was kind of how I ended up taking it a bit more seriously, I guess, and looking at like what else there was within that field. And yeah, drama therapy was like things that came up. I knew that I didn't want to perform, but I wanted to be involved and around artsy people, so that was kind of how I ended up going down that route.
Was there a particular role that sort of stuck out as the one that went, because you have said you weren't, or you didn't want to be an actress, you weren't sort of interested in that sort of route, but you always wanted to be around artsy people. Was there an other role outside of acting that you thought, that one, that sounds fun, and that sort of helped sort of jog you through that bit?
I always said that I was going to do something that I didn't know existed. That was what I said. I was like, I have no idea what it's going to be, but it's going to be something, and I'll do one thing and that will lead on and I'll end up somewhere else, and who knows what that will be. I thought casting agents was cool, but that's because like I like to secretly judge people, but not in a bad way. Like, I like the power. So yeah, casting agency I thought was cool, but I kind of was very open just to seeing what happened, I guess.
Good attitude to have in the arts, I think, sort of being open to try anything and just being interested in the creation of it anyway, like not necessarily a specific aspect, but yeah, no, for sure.
So what made you, I mean, obviously you said in the introduction you didn't go to Warwick, so how does someone go from graduating uni to now kind of being talking to us about that time in between that?
Yeah, so I didn't end up putting Reading down as one of my top two, putting Warwick down as my top two. And I actually, Birmingham was my first choice because it was top for drama at the time. But I felt most comfortable at Reading. But I was like, oh, you have to like, you know, reach for the stars kind of thing. So I was like, well, I'll put Reading as my second and I'll be happy with that. And obviously ended up at Reading, so that worked out. Got very involved in the drama society, very involved on my course, like all through school and everything. I was always the person that was involved in everything. So that didn't stop at uni. And yeah, I did a bit of producing, a bit of assistant directing. And then actually the big kind of transition for me, or like the big kind of light bulb moment, was a module that I didn't even want to do at the beginning. It was identity, agency and advocacy, which I think is actually... I think, Tom, you did a podcast on that module.
Yeah, I remember that module well.
I created like a portfolio about a festival that I would like hypothetically put on that was looking at neurodiverse actors to take on roles outside, like offstage roles.
That's the yes. Thing.
And I did a lot of research around it and I just found it really interesting. And I've always kind of done volunteering type things. And so then that's kind of how I led into kind of the charity sector of arts. And Yeah, so I then started exploring like what kind of was involved within that as part of the portfolio, but also just looking at kind of future careers. And I was, this was like May of third year, so it was kind of getting to an end where everyone's thinking, oh my God, what am I going to do next year?
Yes. Getting to crunch time a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, and I went to one of my lecturers and just said like, oh, can you show me a funding application? Because I've got no idea what they look like. And and it just kind of went from there. And I've kind of found out about development as an area and just started applying for jobs. Was very, very lucky. I actually only had two interviews and I got the second one. So yeah, which is basically unheard of. So yeah, I was really, really lucky. And they kind of changed the role to suit me, which was great. And so then I was at WAC Arts for 7 months, which is a really cool charity in Camden. And they specifically support young people with learning disabilities, but also they have a lot of affordable classes for people in the area, which is really, really cool. But then pandemic.
Of course.
Furloughed. And then my boss at WAC Arts is the chair of trustees, Siobhan Whitney Lowe, great woman, look her up, she's amazing. But she is the chair of trustees at Theatre Peckham, and she knew that I just couldn't sit still for however long I was going to be on furlough, because obviously at that point no one knew.
Yeah.
So she just said to me, look, if you want to do something, just like drop Suzanne a message, who's the artistic director. So I had 4 days of chilling, and then I was volunteering for Theatre Peckham.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I just couldn't stop. Literally, it was beautiful, actually. It was like just before Easter, beautiful sunshine. So got my tan on for 4 days, and then was like, Easter's done, let me start working again. And yeah, so I ended up volunteering for basically full time for 6 months while I was on furlough, which was a wild time. There was four people working. So there were originally, I think, 8 staff members. They were just about to recruit more, but that all got frozen. And then there were 4 staff members working, only one of which was full time. So, I mean,
we were
all hands on deck.
Mm.
And yeah, and I was kind of with them through the thick of it. And now we've come out of that and we're a lot stronger. The team is now at 23 people. And yeah, it's amazing. It's a really cool kind of charity to be a part of.
Mm.
Yeah.
Awesome. And what sort of thing were you actually doing on a day-to-day basis during that first period of the pandemic when you were volunteering? Was it theatre work or was it more community-led work?
Yeah, so definitely more community. I mean, with a theatre focus, but we had a lot of projects that were community-focused. So I can't even remember what my title was because it kind of developed as it went on. But
yes,
I started off kind of helping on the social media and the project side of things, just trying to like stay connected with the young people that attended. Mm-hmm. And we had an app. So I was like uploading stuff to the app so that young people could kind of like carry on doing their classes, but at a time that works for them, because
yes,
a lot of people only had like one phone between a whole family. So they
could
do like Zooms and things like that. Yeah, so we were creating kind of writing and projects and singing projects and just other things like that. And it was a lot of advertising. We did a panel discussion about like what is an artistic director and like demystifying like kind of the role, because everyone's like, ooh, artistic director. And
sounds very intimidating on the surface, doesn't it?
And it's so funny because whenever anyone starts, they're like, oh no, like, it's like Suzanne's the big boss. And I'm like, no, she's not. She's just, you know, it's just, you know, an AD. It's like the same within any role within the theatre, but something a bit different. But yeah, so that was really cool. And then I kind of moved on to fundraising, and we collectively brought in like £300,000.
Oh wow.
Wow.
Funding, which was really, really cool to be a part of.
That's impressive. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, and at WAC Arts my role was partly with fundraising, but I mean, I think I'd brought in like £2,000 at WAC Arts. So it was a big jump, kind of
big step up
grants. Yeah, it was kind of because we kept moving throughout the pandemic, whereas a lot of people shut down. So then we were able to be like, yeah, actually we've supported this many people, we did Instagram lives, all of that stuff. So yeah, so that was kind of what I did, and then I kind of shaped out my role that I'm now doing.
Yes,
which was cool.
And what kind of thing has your role kind of molded into now? Like, I know we said at the start that you're company administrator and company secretary. So what does that look like if people are going, cool, but what is day-to-day job?
Day-to-day, every day is different.
Mm.
I mean, one day I'm organizing a maternity party, the next day I'm like on a board meeting, and then the next day I'm writing a report about soap dispensers. You know, it's yes. literally, that was 1 week. Like, I wish I was joking, but that was 1 week.
Yes.
So yeah, it's a bit of everything. So I guess my role is kind of to make sure that the company is running smoothly. And so it's putting in strategies and making sure that everyone's kind of following those day-to-day structures and systems that are put in place. But because we're quite a small team, it's pitching in wherever you can. And I work very closely with the CEO and artistic director. So anything that's kind of HR related, we'll discuss on a daily basis, just basically to make sure that everything is going well. Yeah, reporting, as I said, like we're massively supported by a lot of trusts and foundations, and we're an NPO organization. So there's a lot of reporting to do. And so it's also making sure that we're collecting the data as it's happening, because the worst thing is when it comes to a report and you've got none of the data and it
absolutely.
Will happen months ago.
Yeah.
So it really is just making sure that we're on top of everything. I would say that's kind of what I do. We were told the other day to describe ourselves as a condiment, and I went for ketchup because, you know, you have to be everywhere. Like, I feel like with ketchup, it's like,
yes.
Everyone's got a ketchup in their fridge. And I feel like that sums up the company administrator. It's the ketchup in your fridge. Like, it's always there. It's trusty and reliable.
Yeah. Completely agree with that. That makes a lot of sense, actually.
It can pretty much work with anything.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I love it. Like, I would be bored if every day was the same. At the end of the day, a lot of the time I'm sitting at my computer, but it's more than that, because I'm writing about what other people are doing. And when you get to like go and see a performance and you've like supported with the reporting of that, and like you've supported getting that through, and then you get to like read everything out after and write the report, like that's why you do your job. Like, see those young people like on stage, like being like, yeah, like this was so cool, I did this, I performed on a stage with like a famous actor, like that's what it's for. So
most it is. Yeah.
And just a quick transition to something I'm very excited to talk about is your Instagram. So opening nights, do you want to just tell everyone what it is to start with? And then we'll sort of dive into some more questions about it. But for the audience listening, what is this Instagram account?
So opening nights is an Instagram account that I set up in March. And it is basically a resource for people who are looking for their first job in the creative industries. So all of the jobs on there are like, don't require 2 years experience. That's kind of what I say. Like, some of them you might need a bit of like admin or like a little bit, but in general it's meant for your first look into the creative industries.
Yes.
Just from my own aspect, it's an incredibly accessible, easy platform to just see an incredibly like broad spectrum of jobs, not just in London as well, which is something Luke and I were talking about earlier on today, just in terms of, it's not just London that has theatre jobs. And sometimes it's easy to forget that. And opening nights is very good at sort of accommodating for that. But it's something that I just thought was a fantastic idea and a fantastic sort of concept to bring to people, because finding jobs is daunting at the best of times, especially in a pandemic in the creative sector that is, in trouble, but still plying along. And the account itself, so how did it come about, and why did you start it in the first place in March? Has it been something that you've been wanting to do for a while, or is it just something that popped up one day and you thought, I'll do that?
Yeah, so a lot of my friends were looking for jobs kind of from January. And I found, so the arts jobs that they send like a newsletter, and that automatically came to my work email account. So I just find myself every morning just having a little scroll, just because I found it interesting to see what was kind of out there. And also, like, because of the email account I'm on, I found that I was getting a lot of emails of people advertising their jobs that might have been missed, like just a lot of jobs on arts jobs. So I just found that I was getting a lot of jobs sent to me just because of the email account I was on. So I would then just forward them on to all my friends and start tagging people and stuff. And to a point where I was like, just tell me if you want me to stop, because I might be really annoying right now. I'm just sending jobs to people every day.
Yes.
And so, yeah, so that kind of all happened. And then a lot of my friends then got jobs, and I was like, oh, well, who am I going to send them to now? Like, I was almost a bit annoyed that they got jobs. Mm. I was happy for them, but also I was like, oh, this has like become my hobby.
Yes.
So I was like, oh, like I could, you know, do something where I like share it more widely, but didn't really like think about it too much, but just kind of kept, it was in the back of my mind. And then one Sunday I was just like, oh, do you know what? I'm just going to do it.
Mm.
I just went on Canva, which is fab because it's free and really easy to use.
Yep.
Just created like a template and then just kind of scheduled some posts, because I kind of done a bit of that when I had done my volunteering with Theatre Peckham. So I knew, yes, like kind of how to schedule posts and stuff. So I was like, oh, well, we'll give this a go. And if nothing comes from it, then fine. Like, I think we were still in lockdown 3 at that point. So I was like, I've got nothing better.
Yeah, I think so.
So yeah, so then I just started posting and like sent a couple of messages to like university groups and things like that, and followed a few people, followed some accounts. And then yeah, it really just kind of grew from there. And now like most of the people that are following, I have no idea who they are, which is pretty cool.
Brilliant.
So yeah, that's kind of how it came about.
The fact that you say that the emails just came through and you're just allowing them to sort of go to a new platform, so it's not coming to you who's already got a job, and you can then provide that service to others. Do you have to go through other websites to find things, or is it primarily just what you sort of stumble across anyway that you send out?
Yeah, a lot of it is just kind of what comes to me. And then like I have a look through Arts Jobs, and so what I've done is I've unfollowed a lot of people on the account. So then I'm only following kind of places that might be posting and other job kind of opportunity accounts. So then when I see something, I might like screenshot it. And then I usually sit down like one or two evenings a week and then just schedule for the rest of the week. And then I've kind of got all the screenshots or like all the pages saved on my computer. And yeah, and then I just kind of go through and schedule them all. And yeah, like you said, actually, with it all being really accessible, that was one of my main things, was making sure that people didn't have to go to the website to then find out they weren't eligible.
Yes. Yeah, because you always put a little description underneath, like sort of right, like if there is any relevant experiences there, where it's based, what the title is, like the core information, so you can sort of scroll through it. Because not being living in London myself, I see them and I sort of like when it says London, I'm like, okay, no, not for me. Maybe later on, but not just now. But there was one specific one that popped up for the RSC that I think I messaged you about actually, and I just saw it and I went, oh, that's actually near me. And just purely seeing it on Instagram in an easy format, it really did encourage me to just go, you know what, I'll send off an application, because why not? And like, despite on the outcome, it gives you a confidence boost that you sent off an application for something.
And you don't have to do the groundwork of trying to find that thing.
Exactly, yes. Exactly. Yes.
You know, you're scrolling through Instagram looking at, I don't know, dog memes.
Exactly.
And, oh, a job. Oh, actually, like, that is quite interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll go for that. And you, like, I mean, I've always said, like, as long as it helps that one person get a job, then that's what it needs to do. Like, it. Yeah. I enjoy it, so
yeah. I was gonna say, sitting down just in the evenings every now and again and scheduling a few posts, and just, it sounds very therapeutic. It sounds like a really nice way to spend an evening, very calm, and just
making color for a reason. It's very calming.
It is very calming. And in terms of the arts sector and careers and everything, like obviously you have such a passion about getting people opportunities, and not just like certain people, but everyone an opportunity in the arts. Is there anything that you think the arts, I mean, this is a very big question and it may not necessarily have an answer, but I thought I may as well ask anyway, but like, is there anything that you think the arts sector could do on the whole, whether it be a tiny little change or whether it be a massive overhaul of how its approaches to certain things, that could help just in purely an early base career aspect, not necessarily the whole system as a whole, but like the early career artists and emerging artists, is there anything that you think the society could do to help them further?
I think, funding is always a big one. And actually, I mean, we can say what we like about our government, but the government kickstart scheme is very good. So, you know, I will applaud them for that. And that's been a really good thing. Like, a lot of the jobs I've posted are with the government kickstart scheme, which, if anyone doesn't know, is for 18 to 25 year olds on universal credit. And a lot of theatres have taken that as an opportunity to get a lot of young people into the arts, and you don't need experience for that. Like, it's very much entry-level jobs, and there's so many opportunities out there because of that scheme. So that's only for this year. So after, like, next year, we then need something else. And that there are a couple of other schemes, like Jack Petchy also provide like internships. They're not necessarily specifically arts based, but a lot of arts companies use them.
Yeah.
There's another one, Gerwood Arts, but it's, yeah, it is just funding, because a lot of smaller arts charities that could potentially provide the actual support and give young people like opportunities to actually grow and not just be like a cog, they're the ones that can't afford it. Whereas like big companies like the BBC, you know, they're so competitive because everybody knows them. And actually they're not necessarily getting all of the experience that they could be at a smaller charity or a smaller organization. Yeah, it's a really difficult question. I don't know if I've answered
Yeah, sorry, it was a horrible bastard of a question. No, I think you've answered it fantastically. Like, you're right, it is about just providing as much as you can where you can, and obviously funding is a big start of that, but getting people involved as much as possible in any advert, and not just the big companies offering it because they can afford it.
It's just giving people the chance to get the experience, because like I said, like, I receive so many more opportunities and can attend so many more events just because I'm on an email address. Like,
yeah,
it's crazy how many things I have access to because of that. And that was something I noticed right at the beginning. Like, that was the same with my first job as well. Like, you're working with people that are in an industry that you want to be in. So
of course
they're going to have more contacts and just kind of grow from there. So I guess it's just making sure that those opportunities are getting to those that are outside of the circle and trying to get in.
And that's why I think that opening nights is so important, actually. And do you actually envisage a world, Amy, where at some point you actually won't have to scroll through the job things, and that you might have already had this happen already, but in terms of getting things sent directly from companies and theatres to say, hi, we're not going to publish this on LinkedIn or insert name of other platform here. Can you put it on for us, where you've got a targeted base of followers that are hopefully all of the age and requirements for that job, that's actually more targeted? And hopefully, you know, is there a world in which you think that happens? And therefore, what kind of role do you think that this actually has in the future of theatre and creating theatre and access to theatre more broadly moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, that's the dream, is that everyone just comes to me and I don't have to do any work.
Yes.
But yeah, some people have sort of sent me stuff directly and asked me to share it, which has been really cool. And yeah, if that can continue and that can grow and the audience people can grow, and hopefully, you know, those people that use my page will then be in a position where then they're hiring and they'll come back and be like, oh, you know, I used your page a lot when I was looking for my job and now we're hiring, like, could you share this? And
yes,
like, it's a cycle thing. And yeah, I mean, ideally the world would just give everyone a chance in the arts. But yeah, I don't know how long it will last, and, you know, if people will grow tired. But I mean, hopefully, I think people are always looking for opportunities just to get involved in the arts, and it's in making it accessible, both by like looking at it, but also that I've made a thing of it, they're all paid opportunities as well.
Yes,
you know, that's a massive thing that people can't afford to work for free, and so that's a massive thing within the art sector, and something that I can get quite passionate about, making sure that are paid correctly. And yeah, I don't know if I've answered the question there, but ideally, yeah, people will come to me with jobs and we can just grow the page.
Yeah.
Create an industries community. And also hopefully other people set up stuff as well. And you know, I don't have any copyright stuff on my page. Like, if other people are finding opportunities and sharing them, then that's fantastic too.
So in terms of early career artists, then we sort of asked what the industry can do to help them, but what could, in your opinion, any advice you can give to emerging artists or even just people who are like yourself, are keen to work in theatre among artistic people, but not necessarily wanting to go into acting and being on stage and being front and centre of the spotlight and so on. What advice would you give to anyone just seeking out this creative world as a career?
I mean, my main piece of advice is like, just send the email. I think a lot of people are like, oh, I don't know whether to send it. Like, what's going to happen? They're not going to reply. Like, that is literally the worst that can happen.
Yep.
So I always just say, send the email. And also, like, don't be afraid to send a follow-up, because everyone's so busy that they might have missed it. But if you just send like, oh, hi, like, I hope you're well. Like, see my email below. I'm really keen. You know, there's no harm in doing that. And there's no harm in sending it to like two people. Don't over, you know, don't send 100 emails to 100 people. Like, that's not going to help. But actually sending it to like one person, and then if you don't get a response from them, just sending it to another person, just saying, hi, like, I don't know if this has been picked up, but I'm really keen. Like, actually, you know, when I receive those emails, I always pass them on. And it might be that if someone sends me a follow-up email, I might then chase up the department that they're interested in, and then that turns into something. Mm. But if you don't send the first email, then you're not never going to even get close. So
You said just send the email, and I was there going, oh yes, I never used to send the email. And then you said, don't be afraid to send the follow-up, and I was there going, yeah, now you're talking to me. Because I don't know what it is, but there is this sort of a weird feeling about sending a follow-up. It's almost like, I don't want to get in your way, I don't want to annoy you, I don't want to pester you for attention and what I'm requesting, even if it's just something as simple as a 5-minute Zoom call. But just doing it, like you're saying, a follow-up can just sort of put it at the top of their inbox again, and they happen to see it, and it's just they've missed it accidentally. So just destroying the sort of the fear around that, for sure. It's something I definitely need to sort myself, but it's definitely helpful advice, for sure.
And that's definitely something that we can actually say that we've done ourselves, and actually we have managed to get guests on the podcast that you may or may not have listened to yet, because we've sent follow-up emails and we've had guests come back to us and say, oh, yes, I've forgotten one about this, but yes, I am interested in this. And actually, you know, from our own experience, we have got now seen that actually, you know, sending a follow-up can actually be as important, or probably even more important, than making that initial point of contact. But I guess to kind of round things up, Amy, we try to always finish on a more light-hearted note, and it can sometimes be quite a big question to unpack, so maybe you've kind of think about this before, but what is your fondest theatrical moment or experience, either a part of work that you might have been involved with or work that you've seen over the years? If you were to narrow it down to that one moment or one piece of theatre, what would be the most fondest memory that you have of it?
It's so hard. It's such a big question.
It is a big question, isn't it?
Moments that they're fond for different reasons.
Mm.
But I think, I mean, my proudest moment is going to be an absolute shock to Tom, but it's my third year play,
I was going to say, being in that, I mean, I'm going to take that as a lovely compliment, so thank you very much.
I mean, so I think the reason why it's so fond is because I still wouldn't change anything about it.
Mm.
And I think that's quite amazing, because I'm very, like, critical of my own work and, like, and myself. But I think that, there's something from my third year play, which, if anyone doesn't know Absurdism, go check out Ian Esco. He's a great guy. Fantastic work. Mm-hmm. But, I did the chairs as my third year play. And, it is just such a great time putting it together. I mean, I've never had a tech day where I don't cry, and I didn't cry on that tech day. So that says a lot.
It was surprisingly smooth for tech days. I was actually very impressed.
And it's something that I think I'll like remember for like the rest of my life. So I guess that's kind of, it was such a like strong achievement for me. So that's probably like the fondest memory. And I think that's potentially like one of the last things I'll do creatively as well, because I'm definitely much more down the admin route now. So that's probably why it's so special.
And talking of admin bits and pieces then, Amy, where can people stay up to date with what you're doing, or more importantly, what is the Instagram handle for Opening Nights?
Yeah, so it's at Opening Night Jobs on Instagram. I'm still scared of Twitter, so I'm not on there yet. But yes, check out Instagram, and on there as well, in the like LinkedIn tree, is my LinkedIn. So if anyone wants to follow on that, you can always DM me as well, just on Instagram. I'm always happy to answer any questions and give any advice that I can. So
we'll put the Instagram link in the bio and everything, just so people can access it. But anyone listening to this now, I would highly recommend checking it out. It's been a massive confidence boost for myself just applying for jobs, and it's I know it's personally helped out loads of people that I know, so definitely check it out. I can see Amy sort of awkwardly sitting there like, ooh. But no, genuinely it is fantastic. And well worth checking out. So I mean, thank you so much for coming on and chatting to us, Amy. It's been fantastic to chat, and I hope to see you very soon.
Thank you. It's been so fun.
So marks the end of this episode of the Talking Theatre podcast, and a massive thank you to Amy for taking the time to speak with us today. Again, I just want to reiterate how incredible a page actually opening nights is, and I know, you know, you've said it during the episode, and it really is brilliant. And I do urge anyone listening that might be looking for that first or second opportunity or whatnot, and a chance to get into the arts to go and follow it. But yeah, I think it was also great to hear about the amount of opportunities that there are actually out there.
It's a very uplifting thing to hear. Like, even if, like for us, for example, we're not in London, it's nice to hear that there are jobs outside of London. Mm. But even just in general, hearing that there are entry-level jobs going out there, and schemes like the Kickstarter scheme are a thing, and they are, I mean, yeah, we can say as much as we want about the government, but that thing is fairly good. So fair play to them for that. And it is nice to see that there are schemes, there are initiatives going on to help everyone get in. It just needs bumping up and increasing in size and funding and everything above. But having people like Amy just out of the goodness of their own hearts do these sort of things is a fantastic place to start. And it does, yeah, I don't know, it really regenerates the love of the industry that we're not in this horribly, I mean, we are in a horribly competitive world, but there are good people out there that want to help.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you always talk about hope, and I think that actually this is one of the biggest indicators of the hope actually that is there. There are things that are still being posted.
Yeah.
And I mean, we've followed it since it started. And honestly, the amount of posts that come through now on a weekly basis is only increasing and increasing. And I think that really is
fantastic. Very, very good. Yeah, very good story and very
good.
Go
follow it. Go and follow.
Yes, good follow.
Absolutely. And hopefully you have enjoyed this episode and finding out a little bit more about that. And if you have, then be sure to rate us and subscribe to us and even tell your friends about us. The more theatre lovers we can reach, the better, really.
And you can follow what we're doing currently on Twitter and Instagram at the Talking Theatre Podcast. And as well as that, if you're interested in coming on for an episode and talking about theatre with us, then you can email us at thetalkingtheatrepodcast@gmail.com, and we will reply to everyone as soon as we can.
Absolutely. So all that's left to say is thank you for listening, and we hope to see you next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye.